And hello once again, it's Boomer Tech Radio. I'm Bob Belongi.
I'm Brenda Belongi.
And I'm Alan Belongi.
We are analog, living in a digital world. Welcome to the program with goodies, gadgets, and gizmos, and the tech news that you can use every week on KCNR 1460 and streaming throughout the world. Plus, you can hear the podcast at boomertechradio.com, where we have our show notes. You can pick us up on Stitcher, Google Play, of course, the old standby, iTunes. You know, remember when iTunes was a new thing?
I've heard of that before.
Yeah. Oh, yes, we do a show about technology, and the stuff changes every day. We can't keep up, and we kind of track this stuff. But one more sign of the coming robotic apocalypse. Google's AlphaGo has beat the world champion Go player.
And Go is a complicated game to master.
Yeah, there's like
the
there's
number
a zillion
of possible moves is like
infinite,
astronomical. You know,
it's ridiculously high.
Yeah, AlphaGo defeated Qi Ji, the world's number one Go player, taking 2 out of 3. So it wasn't a sweep, but yes, AlphaGo has defeated the human. The Chinese, interestingly enough, did not. Stream the perhaps they knew what was going to happen, and they did not allow the Chinese people to see the match.
They like keeping things from their citizens anyway. So.
Yeah, the censors blocked access to Tuesday's online game, possibly because it was broadcast by Google, and the Chinese would prefer people don't even know about Google.
Right.
Official response to the game is a major event for Go and artificial intelligence, according to this article by the Associated Press. Reflects the conflict between the Communist Party's technology ambitions and, of course, its insistence on controlling absolutely what the public sees, hears, and reads. So, Chinese refused to even say why they would block the broadcast.
I had read that the player had played against this machine before about a year ago and lost, but he adopted some of the strategies that the computer employed against him, mm-hmm. against the computer this time, and he said that it plays like a completely different person now. Like, its strategies are so much more, even more different than they were compared to last year, that it's impossible for him to keep up.
It's learning.
That would be machine learning.
Yeah, that would
yes.
be machine learning, indeed.
Learning way faster than any, like, real player would be able to develop their game.
Well, sure. I mean, think about what a computer is really good for, as Bob points out. Is the
Skynet
same,
will become self-aware.
The same task over and over again. And so really, when you think about it, because there's so many options in the game, you can develop an algorithm to explore that, and the computer can just – what else does it have better to do?
Right. It just sits there and plays games against itself, AlphaGo right. does. It
right.
sits there and plays, you know –
iteration
almost
after
constantly.
Iteration. Right.
But it cannot, because of the sheer number of moves, unlike a chess game, it cannot explore every single possibility.
Right.
So
in
it
chess,
has to kind of predict patterns.
Right. In chess, there is a finite number of moves that can be made. The same is true with Go, but it's just ridiculously
a much
big.
Much bigger finite number.
So, I mean, it's might as well be infinite, because you're never going to explore them all in any reasonable amount of time.
So while we're sort of picking on China just a little bit here, of course, some people still don't know that the ThinkPad was purchased by a Chinese company called Lenovo. And not long after that happened, the U.S. government told its agencies, thou shalt not buy Lenovo computers. Because, gee whiz, you don't know what's in the computer. And it's harder and harder to tell what your computer is doing at any given moment.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of businesses that had relied on the ThinkPad series for decades, well, not decades, but many, many years, found themselves suddenly having to go with HPs. But now Lenovo's having to restructure because they are losing market share, possibly because of the spyware that they got caught foisting off with some of their computers.
I'm sure that doesn't help, but I know that government agencies or the government as a whole rotates their purchasing of computers, vehicles, whatever, usually American companies, so Ford, Dodge, Chevy, whatever, And then computer-wise, it's mostly been HP and Dell. For a while, there were Lenovos. Mm-hmm. And I think that's before they got bought out. But then they all started – those were desktops and laptops both. All started to disappear pretty quickly. If you had one of those, it was slated for replacement.
Yeah. Lenovo, I did not – I knew that a Chinese company had bought Motorola and that – who were making the Moto G. It's no longer the Motorola that used to be installed in every cop car in the country.
Mm-hmm.
It's still a communications company, but not anything close to what the American Motorola company was for many, many decades. They kept the big M, and that's about it. Everything else is brand new. But Lenovo's head company also owns Motorola and was selling the smartphone brand of the Moto G. But now that's going to be changing. Lenovo's business in China is going to be split into two groups, the data center group and a consumer division, and that'll be targeting PCs and smart devices. Company was the third largest smartphone manufacturer in terms of shipments. Now they're not even in the top five. So
that's how tech goes. Sands.
Yeah, it is.
Tech just comes and goes as these companies.
Recently, Lenovo lost its place as the number one PC vendor because everybody except the government was buying the less costly Lenovos, and because they have the reputation and the look of a smart ThinkPad.
Mm-hmm.
But a couple of years ago, the news came out about the spyware that was coming bundled in to the ThinkPads. That hurt them pretty bad. And also just their marketing and design, they didn't keep up. And so now they're losing a lot of market share. We are a company to learn quickly, no matter from success or failure, the Lenovo group chairman said. Now, of course, Lenovo says a lot of their business will still take place in China, and that is where they're going to aim their strategies. They're not going to go away. I personally thought that the Moto with the backpack on it was a pretty interesting smartphone because you could have your your basic smartphone does a lot of things, none of them particularly great. And the backpacks that you'd snap onto your under the Moto G,
yeah,
you got a really high quality camera, or you put really good speakers on it, or a honking big battery pack.
Right, it just gives it a specialty of some sort.
But it was more things to pack around and possibly lose when you go to a modular design.
Lose or break or not work right, or the interface gets dirty or whatever.
Yeah. So what do you got for me this week there, Alan?
Well, going back to that AlphaGo, now that it's pretty much mastered Go for the most part and can beat anybody,
Conquest is next.
They're actually looking to have it play this this fairly popular game, especially in Korea, called StarCraft. You mentioned that a few days ago. So they're going to get it to try to learn how to play this game effectively. There's super big competitive leagues and stuff still going on about this game and how to play it just right, and it's all competitive. And it's not too dissimilar from how board games work. It's just all in a digital interface, right?
Great. Let's teach the computers how to fly aircraft and shoot at things like Skynet.
Right, and build them and harvest resources. Might as well be people, you know.
The roundup begins.
So it's got quite a ways before it's ever even close to ready to play against a real person, just because mm-hmm. there's a lot for it to learn. But that's Google's next idea of where it wants to go with this, just to see what it can do.
So, Brenda, you've been picking through a couple of stories. Now, Brenda, unlike myself, has a full-time job, which keeps her extremely busy, especially this time of year. But what do you got there?
Nothing yet.
I got nothing. just slipping through. By the way, if you have the Flipboard app on your device, we have a Boomer Tech Radio magazine. And if you subscribe to that, it makes me very, very happy. And Brenda will check the numbers once in a while. And note that we picked up a few subscribers, so somebody obviously is paying attention.
No,
not mass numbers.
You check the numbers. I just ask the question. How many do we have now?
And I have not looked for some time, as a matter of fact. Well, let's see here. Now I am curious. Boomer Tech Radio, 42 followers.
On Flipboard, I thought you were talking about the podcast.
Well, the podcast I have.
Yeah, that's the same as we had last week, but it's up from you know, for a long time.
23,000 viewers.
Yeah, we were stuck at something like 17 for a while, somewhere in there.
So in terms of, there's a lot of news aggregators, but I discovered that Flipboard really works very, very well, especially if you are a nerd type.
Right. It does a pretty good job of collating everything. And you
curating, yes.
Tag things together and look at them later and whatnot.
Yeah, you can choose to follow certain tracks. The mobile app is different than the iPad app, I discovered by quite a bit. And the mobile app, the phone app is a little tricky at times because of the ads they have to insert.
Yeah, you have to just kind of flip past them nice and quick. Oh, I'm sorry. No. You want to look at them carefully, determine if you want to use their product, and then decide to flip or not.
So who remembers when Amazon was just an online bookseller?
Oh, yes.
I remember when it was just a river.
Yeah, everyone was. Yeah.
Still is, but.
But as a company.
when you said Amazon, that is what you meant was the river, yeah.
Right, and then it slowly turned into this company.
Juggernaut.
And the weird internet thing.
They're launching rockets, for crying out loud. Jeff Bezos says he knew early on he wanted it to be an everything store, and these days looks like he's getting there. On Tuesday, Amazon officially launched a new wedding shop on its handmade site. Amazon launched Handmade in 2015, ostensibly to compete with the handcraft marketplace Etsy, which we just made a purchase from them.
Yeah, Etsy, vendor on Etsy.
Yeah, I've bought from there too. It's a place where a bunch of artisans can make something and then have a shared marketplace.
I'll watch for Amazon to buy them up.
Yeah. Right.
Probably.
If they're a success, Amazon or Apple will buy them.
Seems like it.
And that, you know, it's like YouTube. It used to be really fun. And you had really quirky, goofy videos. The production values were pretty suck, but it was fun. Then Google bought Amazon and turned it into a commercial money-making juggernaut. Now you have to get YouTube Red if you don't want a commercial shoved down your throat every 15 seconds.
Or just install an ad blocker.
Yeah. Does that just stop your playback? I haven't tried that.
It does a pretty good job. Sites don't particularly like you using them, but it does a pretty good job.
And we're going to Brenda will be stepping away from the microphone for a moment. Life goes on, even during a semi-live radio show, but we treat this like a live show,
right?
So keeps
us on our toes.
It does. The handmade wedding shop will be selling everything from personalized cake toppers to confetti to veils. The items will be eligible for two-day shipping through Amazon Prime. You can even order invitations on the site, complete with a custom monogram.
And there you go.
Yeah. Now, Etsy already has a wedding type show. Refinery 29 has compared the sites. There's a site that's based right here in Reading where the show comes from, called The Knot, that is a one-stop shop for all wedding items.
I applied for a job there once.
Did you?
Yes.
Yeah. They started out real small, and they found out they now have like a worldwide reach. I don't know if they're even still here in town, because these companies get successful and somebody big buys them and then takes them away.
Either closes them because they were a competitor or just moves them, yeah. Just picks them up and moves them somewhere else.
So, and they say romance is dead. You can even get your engagement ring on Amazon and then buy the matching wedding band. Now, I'm sorry.
People who purchased this also bought.
Yeah. I'm thinking when you give the ring to the bride-to-be, it would probably be a good idea to take it out of the Amazon box. Because it's just, nothing says romance like a mega online retailer.
Right. It's got the little happy face on there. I think that's a happy face. You know,
it's supposed to be a smile. Yeah.
Right. So there you go. That's hopefully the reaction she gets from receiving that.
Yeah.
So.
Now it may be more acceptable now, but just like online greeting cards, your grandmother, now she does online greeting cards. But when they first came out, and Brenda's mom, the idea of an online greeting card just horrifies her. Of course, if you're doing online greeting cards, it means you're probably using Flash. Yuck.
Right. Yeah.
My mom, Alan's grandmother, likes these Jackie Lawson cards, and those are Flash-based. Mm-hmm. Well, if I get them on my Mac, I definitely got Flash switched off on the Mac, so I have to enable it for each one of these cards that comes through. So.
And make sure it comes from a reliable source whenever you enable
Flash.
Yeah,
do not enable Flash for just because your computer tells you to enable Flash. Lots, last week we talked so much about these scams that are making the rounds.
And Flash is a pretty good way to get infected by those scams.
Yeah. So between that and, of course, the social engineering phishing is how some of these things like the ransomware get spread around so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So we talked last week about, if you missed it, you can, of course, pull up the archive and listen to last week's show about some of the things you can do to protect yourself. Common sense stuff, too.
Right, like just never sharing your password with anyone, for one. Don't write them down, and get a good password, not one that's password 1234.
Yeah. Now, do you, whoever your IT people there, you've got a small company, but if your main server's got ransomware, you'd be in deep stuff.
Deep, yes.
So they tell whoever... whoever's on the network to beware of what they open, right?
Yeah, it says specifically, well, we're not supposed to have any emails that's not, you know, either directly to a vendor or in between employees. No personal emails, period, is what we're supposed to do. But, yeah, there's a lot of things that say...
A lot of companies will only deal through email.
Right. But just as long as it's only vendors... And only employees are what's supposed to be getting emails.
And don't, you know, it's hard to hack a fax machine. So that's one of the reasons why we still have fax machines sitting around.
And they make cool noises.
They do. They do absolutely make some. So did you have anything else for this week?
You know that Microsoft made another version of Windows just for China?
Did they?
Oh, yeah.
Somehow I am not surprised.
Since the Chinese law, a recent law passed in China that they need to be able to look at the source code of anything they use. Because, well, copyright law is not really a thing there. But
it's easier to steal.
Right. It's supposed to be for, you know, security and everything, but Microsoft's like, there's no need for you really to look at the source code. All you get out of that is the source code. You don't really get extra security out of looking at it. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so they made a like kind of pared down, simpler, less robust version of Windows specifically for the Chinese government.
Even wimpier than 10S?
Right. Well, you know, it's a little more open at least, funny enough. But yeah, they made a different version of Windows just so that they could and would share the source code with the Chinese government so that the Chinese government would actually buy it from them.
Well, it saves them the problem, the trouble of having to steal it. Of course, all these Chinese computer systems got infected by WannaCry because they were stolen copies of XP.
Right. I think that was a lot of private companies there, which are all run by the government anyway. But yeah, it's interesting how... they have a lot of companies have to go through a lot of different hoops to deal with China and their, you know, 1 billion people that live there.
Speaking of which, Russia's postal service was hit by WannaCry. Some of its computers are still down. Some employees in Moscow are saying the latest sign of weakness is they made the country a major victim of a global extortion. And now the people are still saying they're pretty sure that these NSA hacking tools were obtained by operators in North Korea.
And that's not surprising.
Where they launched the attack. That's one of the theories, because there are, I guess, certain digital fingerprints in the various codes that point to North Korea.
Right, because, I mean, there's so many different ways to write code and habits you develop in writing code. It's practically a fingerprint to anybody that knows what they're looking for in just how an attack looks. Mm-hmm. That's true for all sorts of different tech things. Essentially, yeah, fingerprints of It's interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting. Now, WannaCry reportedly compromised post office's automated queue management system, infecting touchscreen terminals that run on XP.
Old XP.
Terminals were still shut down in parts of Moscow, but it's not clear how many branches were affected. Now, a spokesman for Russian Post, which is a state-owned monopoly, surprise, said no computers were infected. Some terminals were temporarily switched off as a precaution. In other words, they're minimizing the effect, mm-hmm. So that the people don't just have one more reason to dislike their government. Other institutions in Russia say they were infected by the virus. Russia was, of course, anxious to show off that they, too, are a frequent victim of cybercrime in the face of allegations of their own digital misbehavior. So, the infected post office terminals ran on XP. 20% of the 300,000 computers infected worldwide were in Russia. Mm-hmm. Actually, relatively few computers in the United States, because most personal computers in the U.S. Have gone on to Windows 10, which apparently was not as vulnerable. But the next version of this thing may exploit some things that Windows 10 isn't able to block.
Right. And even a lot of times in the U.S., people actually have like legit copies of Windows. And so they are actually updated automatically. And so any updated version of practically any of the Windows operating systems were protected against this WannaCry virus. So anybody that, you know, leaves their automatic updates on were already going to be protected from it.
Yeah. So I'm not, you know, because the annoying thing about Windows 10 automatic updates is how it will, you get no indication of what's going on, because they want to keep all that stuff, you know, for a better user experience. You don't need to know what's going on behind mm-hmm. the curtain. But all of a sudden your computer like goes brain dead.
It just slows down to a crawl.
A web page loads in about 3 minutes and things like that, and you're going crazy. And it's like, and you look at your hard drive light and it's going crazy. Well, it's downloading yet another update. So they pushed out several updates in the last couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you know what you're doing, you can set it all down to just force it to manual update, and you never have to worry about it slowing down like that.
Or have it do it during certain hours of the day and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's Boomer Tech Radio, and we're going to go ahead and take our break for the bottom of the hour a little bit early. And when we get back, I don't know if you ever heard of Walt Mossberg. He's a well-known tech writer for many, many years. He got started back around 1991. He is retiring, but he wrote a piece for Recode, where he works now. He used to work for the Wall Street Journal, but he wrote a great piece for Recode, where he talks a lot about trends that he has seen and where he thinks a lot of this stuff is going. So we'll talk about that during our next segment coming up on Boomer Tech Radio, the tech news that you can use. More after this. Welcome back. BoomerTechRadio@gmail.com, the email that you can send your message to. You can send, you know, compliments, criticisms, suggestions. What are you guys doing on the air? You know, all those questions.
We accept all questions.
We do it. We do accept all questions. Now, there's a tech writer by the name of Walt Mossberg who's been at this for a very, very long time. Now, I got my first computer when I think it was just before you were born, Alan. About 1984, I think, is when we got the 83, I think, is when we got an Apple compatible. You couldn't afford an Apple Apple II, because they were like $1,500.
That's nothing.
Yeah, nothing. A mere pittance. So think about what $1,500 will buy you now. Back in the mid 1980s, $1,500 got you a 64 kilobyte RAM, 8-bit processor. It was a 6502 processor. In the case of the one we bought, it also had a second processor board in it with a Z80, which is an alternate type of processor. that later would yield Intel processor.
Man, I can't even get pictures down to 64 kilobytes.
Yeah, you can't. But it ran on a version of Apple DOS, and it had two floppy drives.
What did you need the second one for?
Well, because you could copy back and forth between the two drives.
Fair enough.
You would have a system drive, because you didn't even have a hard disk with these machines. So you'd have your system drive, and then you would have your data drive. Everything, of course, was line commands. There was no graphical interface. That would come much later.
This is one step slightly above the hole punch cards.
Yeah. Now, this was before the Mac, even. And I'm thinking, so that would have put us back about 1981 or 82. Long before there was an internet, had a 300 baud modem. Ooh. With which you could dial into a bulletin board system.
Oh,
or for some ungodly amount of money per hour, you could get into a CompuServe, and later on AOL came along. But at the very beginnings, CompuServe, which was owned by H&R Block, was one of the forerunners to a commercial internet. This is when ARPANET was still, scribblings in a book, but the early CompuServe was a way for H&R Block to make money with their, at the time, huge computer systems in the off season, because somebody figured out that they had all these computers after tax season was over just sitting there.
That makes sense. Okay.
So you had to dial in through what was called Telenet and log in through that way. And at that time, CompuServe would cost you like $5 an hour.
Yeah,
Telenet's
still used. Funny enough, my company's computer system runs off of a DOS-based system, and we all connect through Telenet. It's kind of funny.
Yeah, although I'm sure they've updated it.
A little more advanced these days, but it's still the same original premise anyway.
Back in the early part of my career, I had to enter some data into a system, and I have no idea where the system was. But you type this thing in, and it had a cassette tape.
Oh, yeah.
And I guess the data went on the cassette tape, and then when you dial in, it would play back the tape and the data. And I think Telnet was part of it as well, as I recall. There's just, the log-on sequence, it just kind of robot work. It wasn't anything difficult. You just had to do it the right way.
Well, one of the first, really affordable personal computers was, of course, the Tandy Radio Shack TRS systems, which they came up with a couple of iterations. I had about 86 or 87, a clamshell laptop with an LCD display, again, with some minuscule. I think this one had 128K of memory and used a 3-inch. This actually used a cassette tape, too. And so you would, and it took forever, just a basic program. You would put the tape in, and it would load in over a period of time.
And whatever the system was, it was a whopping, it was a dial-in, so it was whopping 300 baud,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And that's how I learned about those kind of things. And it was always kind of interesting.
Yeah. So in 1991, Walt Mossberg began writing his personal technology column in the Wall Street Journal.
Savvy dude, Mossberg.
Yeah, he a very, very savvy dude. At the time, he said, "Personal computers are just too hard to use. It isn't your fault." And he went on to, some of the clumsy things you had to do, like cassette tapes and command lines.
I never minded command lines because, it took a while to get something done, but it wasn't that big a deal. It was always the same. It's just like a conversation. It's just a series of keystrokes you have to do.
That'd be a very boring conversation.
Well, yeah, but that's just one way. You're just like, do this, do this, do this. But I don't know. I never bothered with command lines. Maybe that's because the first computers that we used, a big computer consoles, everything was command line driven.
But, Alan, you remember having to have a driver disk for every single thing that you wanted to plug into the computer.
Yep, everything came with one.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And what a pain in the butt, because you would get they
you got
would
a
be,
printer, you got a yeah. monitor, you got a whatever,
and you
whatever.
Would get something that wouldn't talk to something
oh,
else.
Oh, yes. Always a pain. Well, you still
or
have
your
that problem.
Port wouldn't come to life.
Oh, yeah.
You had serial ports.
Still have that problem, though, to and some extent.
You do. It's not as bad as it used to be.
No.
Now when you plug in a mouse, and it doesn't matter whether the mouse is made by Logitech or IBM or Microsoft or whoever, if you plug it in, you have reasonable expectation that the system will recognize the mouse and go to it. Same when you plug in a monitor.
Right. And at the very least, without installing an extra driver, you get basic functionality out of the thing.
Isn't that, though, because of some standardization or preloading of certain drivers that are standardized or something
well,
like as, that?
Yeah, and there are common drivers now. Early USB drivers were very, you know, very glitchy and buggy. That has all improved. Products have gotten easier to use. And Mossberg makes the point, you can hand an iPad to a six-year-old and and very, very quickly, they will intuitively figure out how to, you know, show them just a couple of things and they'll take off. You see, that's where you see the kid walking up to the big screen at Best Buy trying to flip the channels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, they're little sponges for one thing. And mm-hmm. if they learn this, they'll try it with everything. You know, they don't have a big library of things and they'll try stuff because they don't have those inhibitions or whatever the deal is. But it's just like we grew up with television or a telephone. We all know how to use a telephone.
Right.
And it's like you don't ever remember not knowing how to use a telephone.
But to somebody who, say, was raised in the Old West or some prior time, a telephone was a pretty crazy object.
Pretty fancy yeah. thing right there.
Yeah. But throughout the history of tech, engineers haven't designed things for normal people. They've designed things that for them and people who think like them.
Well,
and that's been a big thing about design and engineering.
True enough.
That's why now things are designed by engineers and then go through the filter of non-engineers.
Right. Well, of course, we had catchphrases like user-friendly. Remember that one?
That's like new and improved.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, but that was the big buzzword. User-friendly, meaning that the computer, a normal person had a reasonable expectation of being able to use it. Plug and play.
Plug and play. Yeah, everything's plug and play now.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But at the time when it was brand new.
Yeah, plug and play. It was like, oh, thank God, it's plug and play.
We call it plug and pray.
Yeah, I had a few printers like that. And just can't get the thing to work. It's supposed to just plug it in and work, but it doesn't.
Yeah. Mossberg goes on to say, anything really new is still too close to the engineers to be simple or reliable. Many people aren't going to be able to hook up a dedicated VR headset. Most of us, like my friend Jack, I would like for him to be able to interact with Siri or Google Down.
Right.
Or Alexa.
Google Home.
But you don't get... especially the way Jack phrases stuff.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. Quite esoteric.
You don't get a consistent answer. And I've asked our Amazon Echo a couple of questions that have just apparently just baffled the living daylights out of
me. I'm sorry. I didn't quite get that.
Although today, if you're listening to this broadcast and you have an Amazon Echo, ask your Amazon Echo, what is the meaning of life, the universe, and everything? Now, you have to be a Douglas Adams fan to appreciate the answer, and I'm going to leave it at that. And that one's giving...
Better give a numerical answer.
Yeah, that's right. It needs to be a numerical answer if it's really up to date.
So
I said that in a class one time, and only two people got it.
Oh, what a great talent Douglas Adams was. If you've never read Hitchhiker's Guide... Or it's very British. It's the only thing more offbeat than Douglas Adams is, say, Terry Pratchett.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Discworld. Good stuff.
Probably, yeah. And I love the robot in Hitchhikers.
Oh, yes.
Oh, don't
Good old
bother.
Marvin. Well, can you believe it's been a decade since the first iPhone came out? It's,
And it came and ruined the world.
Yeah. Well, it is. It has, in fact, become the new personal computer. We talked last week about the Samsung S8 that you can plug into a pod. And this has been attempted before, but the S8 appears to be pulling it off. Plug it into a docking station, and now your computer's up on a big screen.
Mm-hmm.
That's an intermediate technology. As we get closer to, say, having your display work in a pair of glasses, or even, let's say, in a contact lens.
See, that'd start being pretty cool there.
Yeah, that would be.
That's right. You know, Terminator vision or
Borg,
whatever. Borg vision. Yeah.
I want a HUD. Definitely want a HUD.
There you go.
You know?
Yeah, why not?
Heads up display.
Yeah. That would be cool.
Shows your heart rate, you know, your location.
There's a whole bunch of stuff. Well, that and who's calling, whether you want to answer them right or not, right away or not.
You're going down the street and you're getting. Yeah. And the thing is, who owns all this data?
Well, they mine it from us.
Yeah.
Like Yelp. You know, you walk by the restaurant and, it, you know, get a blah.
So
a symbol instead of.
The smart speakers are just, you know, we are still. People want Jarvis. From the Iron Man movie.
Who wouldn't?
Who wouldn't? Absolutely. A snarky reply, always having the right answer.
But always having an answer.
Yeah. It's been said that artificial intelligence, the first inning of a very long game. In fact, the first batter hasn't even really come up to base, or come up to plate. The fastest growing family of speakers, the Amazon Echo, still below 10 million units. By comparison, Apple sold 50 million iPhones in just 90 days.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to offer a perspective on that. When you think about it, your smartphone will do everything that, say, a Google Home does or an Amazon Echo does. You can do this on your phone. Mm-hmm. So why get another device?
Right.
You know, for $170 or whatever, $150 on sale, whatever, that does the same thing. Why? And it's not as portable.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's maybe some of the holdup.
Right. Its purpose is to not be portable. Its purpose is to sit there
right.
And you talk to it.
Right.
So
Google has announced 2 billion with a B Android devices in active use globally. Apple says there's over 1 billion iOS devices in active use. And right now, it seems, you know, we haven't had any massive breakthrough. Look at what's happened with processors. Not too many years ago, there was a new generation of Intel processors hitting the market every few months.
Mm-hmm.
Now we've hit the, I understand there's a new Core i9, but it's still the same basic architecture.
Right. They're just calling it something different.
Yeah. Well, they're adding more cores and more threads and more processors, but we're not making these quantum leaps like they were. And part of that is Moore's law is starting to stall out because of the laws of physics.
Right. Atoms only get so small.
And light can only travel so fast. So the amount of time it takes an electron to get from point A to point B is your limiting factor.
Is a limiting factor, absolutely.
So
to say nothing about its heat generation,
yeah.
Too.
You might be able to shorten the path that it has to take, but you cannot change its potential speed.
Well, we're already down to a couple of atoms of thickness for some of these pathways.
Right, and you can't get a lot smaller than that at our current level of understanding.
Yeah,
so.
I was going to say at our current level.
The other thing is that a lot of this technology that is being innovated is being stumbled by people trying to make the quick buck with a patent, troll patents. Or patent trolls.
Mm-hmm.
So anytime you get something in the market, immediately expect to be sued, which will tie you up because everybody wants a piece of that. Everyone wants a piece of that pie. So Mossberg came up with a phrase that I really like. Right now we have visible computing. We have our devices that are visible in our hands. You go home, you've got a screen, you've got a box tied to the screen and all that. We're moving towards what he calls ambient computing. The devices are still there, but they are woven into the fabric of our lives, if you will.
Now, got a computer in your couch.
IKEA is actually building processors into furniture that become part of the smart home.
And they'll have wireless signals in there that connect to everything else in there, I'm sure.
The systems may be activated by voice command, you know, computer.
Well, there's thought command.
Yeah, well, maybe even
coming
just a
as well would do that eventually. They've already been experimenting with that sort of thing.
Fridge, get me a beer.
Yeah, Facebook's famed researcher Regina Duggan has announced her secret team working on using the brain to type and to control augmented reality devices. Now, the stuff gets smaller and smaller over time. There was a skit on Saturday Night Live where they were talking about one of the cast members was playing Steve Jobs, showing off his series of iPods, each one smaller than the last. The final model was literally invisible, yet holds every photograph ever taken.
All of them.
Every song ever performed by anybody anywhere.
At any time.
Stuff that hasn't been made yet is on there.
So it's becoming integrated, and the National Geographic, did you see the cover of that from last month, about human evolution? And you had the ape, the Cro-Magnon, the Homo sapiens.
Yeah,
Neanderthal, Homo sapiens. And the one in the very front was a rather Borgish-looking individual with a cyber eye and enhanced. So we are moving into William Gibson's world of the cyberpunk. And it will be an interesting place.
I have little doubt. I mean, when you think about it from the medical world point of view, you lose an eye, so you get a bionic eye, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
You lose a limb. They already have that, where they're making nerve connections in prosthetics to function like a natural limb.
Or you have money and you want better vision, so you get a better eyeball. Mm-hmm. Or you want to throw a ball harder, so you get a better arm. There's all sorts of ways it can progress.
Lots of different ways.
So augmented reality, and you know, we've all seen the clip of Tom Cruise waving his hands in the air like he just don't care. Yeah, they're a Minority Report. But as Brenda discovered at CES,
your arms get tired.
When you're doing the Tony Stark thing, your arms get tired.
You have
after
to go to the
while.
Gym and work out just to be able to handle the physicality of that.
Yeah, keeping your arms above your shoulders for long enough. Ugh.
Even out in front of you, holding it up in any configuration, after a while you get tired, which I think is kind of an unexpected aspect of that. Even if you were waving your hands over some sort of flat surface that's, you know, waist height or something like that, it still is very physical.
Yeah. Now, I've pointed this out to Brenda, and so she has seen it. The pilot episode of Star Trek, which had a much different crew, and they took that pilot episode and rolled it into a later episode of the regular show with Shatner and Nimoy. But Leonard Nimoy was in the original pilot, along with and the captain at that time was Christopher Pike.
Pike.
But they show one clip, and you can dig it out, where the Spock character is very different than the Spock we all came to know, walks up to a console and waves his hand across the front of it to get the display to change.
Mm-hmm.
A gesture-based interface to the computer. Now, obviously, the producers said that looks stupid, make him push a button.
No, this is future tech, man.
It was Kinect being thought out in 1967.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting. Well, somebody saw that coming.
A lot of modern technology, I'm sure, in the 70s looks stupid.
People
sitting there with these little weirdo devices that can, like, call instantaneously to everywhere in the world. What kind of dumb crap is that?
Well, the flip phone and a communicator, put them side by side. You know. Of course, some people are going back to clamshell-type flip phones rather than the smart screen.
We have a friend like that, that smartphone was just too much for him. It was too much phone. He didn't need all of that extra stuff, so he went back to a flip
phone. Too much not phone. So yeah, he wanted just the phone.
That's exactly the right perspective. Too much not phone. All but phone, right?
Right. I mean, if you just want a phone to carry around, then there's no real reason to get a smartphone because it's 99% not phone.
So Mossberg,
which is why it's so funny that we call it a smartphone,
right?
Says, because we do a lot of other things. Most of the things we do on a smartphone are not phone tasks.
Nothing to do with phone portion. Yeah.
So Mossberg says the visible technology that we're dealing with right now, and I've made this statement before. Right now, the computers are about where radio was circa 1930. And look how far it's come since then. In the 1930s, the home radio entertainment unit, you know, prior to TV, and I think Brenda went with me once to see our friend who collects radios has a radio that was meant for a very rich person's house. This thing is like a car turned on its side. I mean, this thing is monstrous. But yeah. It had a record cutter built into it. Has something like 50 or 60 chrome-plated tubes.
You need to chrome-plate those?
Yeah, I was going to say, it's an electronic work of art, actually, when you look at it now from today's standards. But back then, I'm sure it was designed in a more practical manner. But, they're really, really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jet, the power that runs one of those vacuum tubes will recharge your phone several times over.
Yeah.
So the computers have gotten much easier to use, but they're still a device that you have to learn how to interact with. So we're moving into a more natural language sort of approach. It's been an interesting ride, but one thing I did want to put out here, if British hospitals, Mossberg goes on to say, if British hospitals had to shut down to a ransomware attack, could online crooks lock you out of your house or office or car?
Yeah, if you get enough technology in them, probably, yeah.
Yep. So the answer here is, if we're really going to make use of this technology, just people say we should walk away from it all. There's a big I believe in all things in moderation. There's people who say they won't have anything to do with technology. I get calls here at the radio station. I'll say, well, you can look it up. No, I won't have a computer in my house. Okay. Well, that's fine.
They're talking to you on the telephone.
Yeah, essentially.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. We have just been waxing eloquent here.
Did you go over time?
We didn't go over time, but we are definitely running up on the end of the hour. I want to thank everybody for listening. Stay tuned, because this show is bringing you all this stuff as it develops day by day.
We have another hour to go.
We do. I have another hour after the top of the hour news here at KCNR. And, of course, if you're listening on the web, as soon as we finish the music, we'll pick up our second hour of Boomer Tech Radio. Wherever you go, whatever you do, be safe. Be good to each other. Welcome back. Hour two of Boomer Tech Radio. I'm Bob Belongi.
I'm Brenda Belongi.
And I'm Alan Belongi.
Analog living in a digital world. If you're listening to the podcast, you're about halfway through the show. Thank you very much for listening. You can download us on iTunes or Stitcher or Google Play, or you can go right to the website, boomertechradio.com, and check out the show notes. What I managed to put together. Usually I scribble down, okay, we talked about this, we talked about that. Not too many details. Certainly nothing like what the tech guy does, but he has a whole staff to do that.
Yeah.
It's people.
Yeah. By the way, if you are listening to this show locally and you're not aware of it, the Tech Guy podcast is a very good one. And we get a lot of we don't steal any of Leo Laporte's material, but we find ourselves often talking about the same stuff.
Well, the tech news is the tech news.
Yeah, tech news is tech news. So I'm trying to remember. Now, this, Alan, this was one of your uncle's favorite movies back in the day, and it certainly made I'm trying to remember, the Ford Taurus a popular car, because they wanted this futuristic car for the police to drive around in, and the Ford Taurus had just come out, and so that's what all the cops were driving around in. And actually, I've got two things running at once there. But
that was an interesting mashup.
It wasn't.
You want to try that again?
I do, as soon as I can get to the right page here. So we were talking about
having people.
Yeah. Wait for it. Anyway, this is part of the theme music to the movie RoboCop with Peter Weller as a cybernetic police officer, and there's that great scene from the movie with Ed 209, and I think I've shown you that, where the enforcement droid has a malfunction.
Yeah.
That's a great, it was a glitch.
Oops.
Now, we've talked about, in the last hour, we talked about AI, you know, the Go player being defeated roundly by the robot, rise of the robot apocalypse, and now from where else but Dubai?
And Dubai is starting to roll out their own versions of RoboCops. Well, a little less intimidating and not having guns and, well...
This is good.
Doesn't really arrest people either. It's essentially just a... well, it's practically a little robo-drone that just wheels around. It's a mobile help desk more than a cop.
Uh-huh, okay.
But it is a representative of the police force. And since a lot of people aren't going to, like, go down to the police station or whatever, you can access it to report crimes or to get more information about events that the cops are going to be helping with or whatnot. But, yeah, over in Dubai, they've got these police
robots. So, like, community service drones.
Yeah, for the most part. They're like help desks on wheels.
They're little roly-poly things that roll around.
Right, yeah.
So they're not humanoid and they aren't intimidating. They don't have law enforcement authority.
Yeah, they don't. Now, is it Lowe's or Home Depot that has the mobile kiosks that roll around?
Yeah, I think it's Lowe's. Mm-hmm.
And then the Dubai police is looking into...
I haven't seen one yet, though.
Into, like, essentially exoskeletons for their police officers, which... you know, are kind of like robots, but they'd ride around in these exoskeletons. It says they'd be able to run at like about 80 kilometers per hour, which is about 40 miles an hour-ish.
I want the one that Ripley had in Aliens.
Right, something like that.
Let her go!
But it would give
Pacific
cops,
Rim.
Yeah, like smaller version of that. But it would give cops there, you know, a lot of extra mobility, a lot more carrying capacity, and be a lot... well, for one, a lot more imposing upon people. I mean, a couple of cops in a car, you know, is only so imposing. But when you get a guy that's standing, you know, 8 feet tall in their exoskeleton.
That can knock your block off.
That could, you know, pick you up with no problem. It starts getting a little more intimidating.
Ooh, yeah, that could be interesting.
Mashable has a great picture.
Wait till the technology's hacked.
Yeah. Mashable has this great picture of a South Korean robot. I mean, this is right out of anime. It is 4 meters, so that's about 12 feet tall, with these gigantic arms and the operator sitting in it. Mm-hmm. And so, actually, I think that the pilot should be a Japanese schoolgirl. But
the new Tonka toy of the future.
Right? Yeah, absolutely.
Like one of those little itty-bitty excavators that you can pretty much wear.
In our, we hope, joking about the robot apocalypse and Skynet and all that, one of the hallmarks of the Terminator films was, of course, the hunter-killer drones.
Right.
Long before we had our own little personal drones, these things were flying along, zapping people.
Mm-hmm.
Now we've had people attaching pistols to their drones.
To their drones, yes.
And there are reports, of course, of ISIS putting hand grenades on these commercially available drones and using them to carry out attacks. So there's a concern that sooner or later somebody's going to strap a pipe bomb or worse onto a consumer drone and fly it into a crowd.
Of course they will.
And cause some mayhem.
I don't mean to be paranoid or pessimistic, but credible.
It's something obvious that's definitely going to happen sooner or later.
So in response to this fairly theoretical threat, what does the government decide to do but slap everybody?
Of course. You've got to put a law on things, right? So... there apparently is this series of drones in the Channel Islands called a sky fence that jams pilot signals to stop drones from bringing contraband into the prison. So that is really interesting about that, because drones, I had read a long time ago, there was a report that drones were being used to drop things off in the prison yard, contraband and even weapons. Knives and such like things, and then, you know, fly away. So kind of interesting. So there's success stories, though, that drones have been very helpful. For instance, in Africa, they have been very instrumental in helping stop poaching in some areas. And this article from Engadget says that it says here, you may not have to register your personal drones with the FAA anymore. Did they change that?
I don't know. I would have to.
Yeah, I'm
pretty
follow
sure
up on that.
You are required
I think so.
Yeah.
There are some you don't have to register due to their size, but those are little itty-bitty things.
Yeah.
And not the kind of drones that can deliver payloads and things like that.
The lots are very confusing, because if you want to do anything with your drone that could conceivably make you money, like shoot video for pay, you have to go through a lot of regulatory hoops.
Right.
And that's an evolving thing.
It's very
interesting.
And
I'd hate to see this get stifled because of some paranoia.
Well, and they're just so handy for so many industries and probably growing. But new draft legislation in the federal government is going to contain content that would authorize the government to track, take control, destroy, and otherwise, you know, limit the use of drones that the government thinks pose a threat in specially designated areas. So the White House lawn,
yeah,
near airports.
Yeah.
This is a big problem we have in the wildland fire industry, is that drones are interfering with air operations. And most of the time, I really believe that the people who are operating drones in these areas know they shouldn't be doing it.
Right.
That it's unsafe and it's illegal, and they do it anyway. So these are the folks that are giving rise to this kind of legislation, because people just can't behave themselves in this arena. So they'll make a law about it. Like, you know, it'll get enforced.
Yeah.
But the difference here with this is that the drone is going to be able to, you know, be shut down remotely or what have you.
Now, that is providing that the drone is using a standardized frequency.
Well, that's the thing that I was going to say, is that that's probably going to be a demand, a part of the legislation, is that there be that back door to allow law enforcement or other government authorities to be able to do this. So this is there's like 10 pages in this draft bill. It's part of the National Defense Authorization Act. And, you know, and again, they're making it clear that these are in specially designated areas. And the bill, to quote the article here, the bill would allow the government to detect, identify, monitor, or track without prior consent an unmanned aircraft or system.
Now, some states are trying to pass laws to completely outlaw ownership of drones. That's not going to happen. And I understand the people who say, well, I don't want this thing looking at me, and I'm going to take my shotgun and take it out of the air. Well, if you shoot down the drone and its lithium-ion battery starts a major fire, this could be a legal problem for you.
Yep. So this legislation would also allow the government to use reasonable force to disable, disrupt, damage, or destroy a drone or its cargo. And this part, I think, is interesting, is it also would allow research to be conducted on any equipment to figure out how to do all this. In other words, how to hack it or destroy it or, you know, take countermeasures. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of interesting, and of course this isn't just your everyday drone that's going down the street, or is doing things that are perfectly allowed and are documented or what have you. These are for situations where that's a restricted area. I mean, airplanes can't fly everywhere either,
right?
And so drones are in that same
right. Private pilots type, have extremely limited.
You can't fly.
Very stringent rules on where they can go.
Except for takeoff and landing.
Right.
For instance, they can't fly within 1,000 feet of the ground. So if you were at the nearby lake, for instance, and here comes a non-float plane that isn't going to land on the lake, even if it was a float plane, isn't going to land on the lake, and it comes in and flies over your head a couple hundred feet above your head, that would be illegal.
Yeah.
So I think that's where they're coming from here, is that this is deemed to be an aircraft. And there's certainly places where it's inappropriate for airborne craft to be. So it'll be very interesting. But, you know, getting contraband into the prisons, folks are very clever.
That's very creative.
Very creative.
So they have a net of sorts that just interferes with the radio signals when the drones get anywhere close to the prison?
Yeah, apparently it's a in that frequency band, and it's just garble that will overwhelm the device's receiver.
And I guess they try to make it go up high enough to where you couldn't just fly over the thing and then drop whatever they were trying to deliver.
Well, the system that I saw actually uses a optical tracker and then a directional antenna to just blast the thing.
Oh, I got it. So it's a directed burst of radio. Okay,
yeah,
gotcha.
It's described as an invisible wall that jams the pilot's signals.
It's more like a radio gun.
Yeah. So they, but it's a broad, you know, it's like force field of sorts. Well, really, in a sense, because they hope that the signal jamming technology, you know, takes out the drone, or it returns to base, or does something, you know, where it leaves the premises. In other words, in one form or another.
I wouldn't be surprised if. The manufacturers are required in the not too distant future to build into manufactured drones sold in the United States a squawk ID like what commercial airplanes have.
Right, and they're like
an IFS identified. Right.
Yes, so an identifying
when it hits signal. When it's inquired, it sends a data burst identifying itself. Now, can this be hacked? Yeah, but just like your phone identifies itself. Onto the network, I'm willing to bet that will be forced to be built into these systems, that each drone will have a unique signature. And if you're caught with one that doesn't have that unique signature, you're in a world of trouble.
Right. That seems reasonable, really.
And that protection net doesn't seek to make the drone fall out of the sky, because you could hit somebody, then you got a liability issue. So it's it takes advantage of it interferes with the signal. It takes advantage of the drone's programming to return to base.
Right, most drones
when it loses connection with the controller.
Which would be a good thing if it happens to be one that's carrying a live grenade or something. Send it back where it came from.
Mm-hmm. Probably wouldn't return last that.
The sender.
it wouldn't get far enough to return to the sender, but at least it would blow up somewhere else, perhaps.
Harmless, yeah.
Well, one would hope, anyway.
So, Alan, I see you have another story up on your... Alan does his research on the phone. My eyes aren't good enough for that.
Yeah, I just sit there, and I'm still young enough to where I can just look right at the phone for it. I know.
Yeah, but the thing about it is that wait another... Well, I'll say 10 years, and then you'll need reading glasses, and then you'll know what it's like.
Maybe. I'll get a cybernetic eye before then.
Oh, yeah.
Just like that National
Me first.
Geographic.
I'll have
cover.
One before you do. I'm older.
Well,
my eyes are worse.
A little bit about, like, security. You know the whole online cloud and, like, information and stuff that everybody keeps online and whatnot?
Yeah, yeah. And you're encouraged by many entities
this
to use the cloud.
This is such a good idea.
Yeah.
Well, there's so much cloud computing and so much storage on the internet and whatnot, and it's all constantly updated that it makes it nearly impossible for it to encrypt. Encryption is kind of like security method for, you know, data. It scrambles it all to keep people from being able to get into it.
Okay.
Well, a recent analysis said that 42% of databases online are currently unencrypted in the cloud. So
if somebody gets past the login password, they can just download these files, which could be user databases and passwords and things like
right.
that.
Right. Like, you know, it's only got the first
documents.
The first level of encryption, which is the password, the initial wall to get passed into it. A lot of actually secure databases, you know, after logging in, you would still need to be able to decrypt the
right.
files out of it in order to get anything usable from it. But yeah, it's since things change so fast in these online clouds, they it's not feasible yet to like constantly keep them encrypted.
Okay. Yeah.
Because it would have to constantly decrypt it and re-encrypt it for a lot of files in order for them to keep up with it.
So there's a lesson there from the point of view that if you want your stuff backed up, it would probably be a really good idea to have something local you could use.
Yeah, local backup is still really the best way you can do it. It just actually takes effort on your part. Get an external hard drive,
get a USB 3, 1 terabyte drive. I guarantee most of us will never never say never.
A lot of people wouldn't, though.
Yeah.
I mean, and not to mention, you don't really need to back up, like, movies or stuff, like if you
right.
like took a movie and put it on your hard drive, but like personal files and pictures and whatnot, a terabyte hard drive is going to last you a long time.
Yeah, and so, for really critical stuff, you can get an encrypted USB key.
Right, So it's still the most secure way you could possibly back up your stuff. You plug your hard drive in, you load everything you want on that hard drive, and then you go put it in a closet. It's not connected anywhere. A hacker can't access it because it's sitting in your closet and not getting any power. It's going to sit there and remember all the stuff you want it to remember for, well, as long as you're going to be alive.
Right.
So you don't got to worry about it.
Yeah, most of these drives, especially a solid-state drive, yes, they have a lifespan, but it's based on the number of read-write cycles that they go through.
Right, and so sitting in your closet not doing anything is going to make it last practically forever.
And because it's not magnetic, it's not prone to deterioration of just sitting around with random magnetic fields. So it should theoretically last for quite a while if you keep it in a controlled environment so it doesn't get too hot or too cold.
Right, and again, it's... A hacker is not going to get to that information on there. They're just not. So the only thing you'd have to worry about at that point is your house burning down.
Yeah,
but you'd have more problems at that point.
That would be a downside. Yeah, that would be. Now, Brenda and I have extolled the virtues of our Amazon Fire HD7 tablets. Actually, yeah, Fire HD tablets, the 7-inch. And now ours are like 3+ years, almost 4 years old, right?
Have to be.
Yeah. It wasn't long after they came out. We got them at, I think, Freddy's
Fred Meyer's
up in Oregon. And
don't tell the government, no sales tax.
No, you put that on your,
It wasn't long after they came out, and I have said repeatedly, if I had just one device that I could take with me to the desert island, it would be a Fire tablet because it's got a nice little 7 or 8 inch screen.
Eminently portable.
Very portable. Good size for reading because it's about the size of a paperback book and has an excellent screen.
Personally, my biggest thing for wanting to take something to a desert island would be its battery life. I mean, I'd want it to be,
The Fire tablets have pretty decent battery life and you could charge them off of a solar panel.
Well, you get plenty of that
on a desert island.
There you go.
I don't know. Having my electronic device on a desert island is probably not my first concern.
Well, it's one of those theoretical
I understand.
Well, Amazon's latest revision to the 7 and 8-inch Fire tablets are going on sale now. We paid close to $150 for our tablets, if not even a little bit more than
I'd
that.
I'd have to look that one up.
But new models are coming out. Modest upgrades. The hardware is a little bit better. The prices, though, are pretty amazing. If you're not doing anything real fancy, if you just want to be able to browse the web, read a lot of books, listen to some music, it's really hard to go wrong with an Amazon Fire tablet. Yes, you're locked into that Amazon ecosystem, but it's not nearly as onerous as it used to be. If there's the Fire 7 and then the Fire HD 8, both of them have a quad core processor. Storage of the 7 has either 7 gigs or 16 gigs of that should be 8 gigs or 16 gigs plus a micro SD slot that'll hold up to 256 gigs. That's a lot of books, baby.
That's a lot of words.
That's a lot of text. The Fire 8 HD has up to 32 gigs of built-in storage plus the micro SD card. About a gig and a half of RAM for the Fire 8. The Fire 7 has 1 gig. Battery life up to 12 hours on the HD 8.
That's enough.
Pretty impressive. Yeah. That's enough to get you through. If you're on an airline that doesn't make you put away all your electronic toys, that'll last you a good long time. Both of them have dual band Wi-Fi. The HD 8 has dual stereo speakers, which is not a big thing because you're probably going to hook up your headset to the thing anyway.
Most likely.
Mostly.
You're going to sit there and watch a movie on it.
Comes in a number of colors.
No, so important.
Yeah. Now, here's
so affects its performance.
Well, most of us put them in a case anyway. Well, here's the thing.
I picked the yellow one. You can find it.
The Fire 7 sells for $50 and sometimes less.
That's amazing.
The HD 8, which again, we're talking about a quad core processor, $80.
That's pretty cheap for those little things.
Yeah. So if you've got a tween and you're looking to get them their first device besides a phone, you know, something they can read on.
Or even younger.
Or even younger, because these come in kids' versions. They have padding around the edges and a preloaded software that is
kid-friendly.
Kid-friendly. For those of us who love media, now, as a matter of fact, at a recent event that Brenda and I were at, I took my Kindle Fire with me to play the music for this parade that we were announcing. And I had forgotten to bring the right jack, so I just stuck the microphone next to it. And it actually played really nice.
Yeah, it was not bad. It was very serviceable. Let's put it that way.
And a little bit of loss from, you know, the transfer.
But in that environment, it didn't matter.
In that, yeah.
Right, it's all noisy anyway.
it was on a street, outdoor speakers. Fidelity was not the name of the game.
Yeah,
there.
That's just not practical.
Nobody would notice anyway.
You could recognize the song. If you knew it, you could sing along to it. So isn't that what y'all need in that environment?
So if you're not a real techie person and you don't need an iPad, and you're just looking for something to be able to haul around a lot of books with you, do a little bit of web surfing, answer your email, go on Skype. Really, it's hard to go wrong. And if you lose it, it's not the end of the world.
Yeah, it's $50.
either $50 or $80 for a Amazon Fire. That's this half of the show. We got one more segment coming up after the bottom of the hour break. Boomer Tech Radio. We'll be right back. Back for one more segment of Boomer Tech Radio. And by the way, the theme music, which we like to play on this show, composed and performed by George Wood off the PodSafe Music Network. It's called 8-Bit Junkie and being used by permission. So we don't have to pay royalties, although I did promise Mr. Wood that if we ever actually made money on the show, I would cut him in for a piece of it. So we're still waiting for that. So, trends come and go. When I was growing up, there was the hula hoop, you know, in the 80s, there was the pet rock. There have been all these crazy trends that have just taken off seemingly overnight, but...
I had pogs.
Pogs, and that was what, the little flippy pogs?
Nobody knew what they were. They were little pieces of cardboard that everyone had a different way of how you're supposed to play them, but yeah, they were complete
melt
bad
caps,
items.
I think. Yeah, it was something. Yeah.
Well, it was just actually just they were produced as cardboard circles, and then you had the metal ones that you'd hit them with. So there was a rule somewhere, but nobody knew them.
So, but there was a time when everybody had them, and they were selling like crazy, and people made vast amounts of money off of them. Well, there's one now, and that's the rise of social media has made these must-have gadgets spread even faster.
Right. And
case in point.
Explosive thing. Right. So the latest rage in the toy world right now is called a fidget spinner. And if you haven't heard about this, well, let's just say Google it. Wikipedia has a little article
here. Yeah, where
have
you been if you haven't heard of it?
Yeah. Well, now, this is, for most adults, what kind of thing? Yeah.
If you have a kid, you know about it.
Yes, if you have a kid, you probably already know about it. But the phenomenal rise of this particular toy was undoubtedly assisted by social media and online stuff. This toy is so new that apparently it's not even in Walmart yet. That's how new it is. You can get them elsewhere for sure.
Right. It's on. It's not only online distributors.
Right, and it's not on the.
You know, there's a Chinese factory cranking these things out by the bazillion.
Oh yeah, and you know, Walmart's going to have the $3 version, and like most of these little must-have toys, that you know, you got to collect them in different colors and whatnot. But if you don't know what a fidget spinner is, it's a 2 to 3 to even more bladed little disc kind of thing, and the blades are rounded off, so this one sort of looks like, I don't know what it looks like.
They just kind of hold this thing and
and then
it
has a bearing in the middle, and you pinch it between your fingers, and then you twirl it. And this was designed. It's found uses in a therapy mode, if you will. The toy's advertised as helping people who have trouble fidget focusing, or they fidget. and even helps them focus or stay calm. Folks with ADHD, autism, anxiety attacks, or just plain boredom. And this is akin to somebody that doodles during a meeting, you know, on the margins of the paper, their notebook, or what have you. And interestingly enough, I saw a news article on this because it was talking about the business end of it and the rise in the amount of money that's associated with this. This has been the top-making toy revenue stream ever. And what's kind of interesting is that there was an article posted in a business magazine in December of 2016, late December of 2016, in Forbes magazine, described fidget spinners as the must-have office toy for 2017.
I think that's an oxymoron. There should be no toys in office.
Yeah.
I don't know. Sometimes you have to do things. My brother's office used to have like a pool toy inflatable, a frog that was around for quite a while and actually got batted around. But who knows, right? At any rate,
There's a whole thing called cubicle warfare.
There's that too, right? And so
little trebuchets.
Yeah, that's right. The hula hoop is an example of this, where it rose very quickly. It also fell off very quickly. So that's the interesting thing about these. These have nowhere near reached their peak just yet. And so, in a fit of curiosity and looking these things up, which are a decidedly analog toy themselves. There's no electronics in it, but the
you don't have to worry about this thing hoverboarding in your kids' hands.
That's right. But spreading news and marketing them and stuff is decidedly involved in tech itself. And I watched this 10-minute video the other day of this guy demonstrating tricks that you could do with your fidget spinners.
So like a yo-yo,
yeah, very much that same sort of thing as with a yo-yo or.
Which kind of comes and goes.
You know, but what's interesting about this to me is that what's the core of all of this is the human experience. Hula hoops, fidget spinners,
pet rocks.
It doesn't matter
the shiny thing.
What it is, what were those coins that kids had at one time? They were about the size of a poker chip, and you had
those were the pogs.
Pogs,
pogs, yeah. So that was a big thing too, and it's the same thing. It's a kid fad, whatever. But it's just the device changes every time.
Ooh, shiny.
Yeah, it's kind of like that.
It probably has a lot to do with
Cabbage Patch dolls. I mean,
us wanting like a shared experience with something else. You know, you see someone else do it. You're like, hey, I want to do that too. It doesn't even matter what it is, but I want to do it.
And it's also each generation has its thing as well.
It has to have its own version of this.
Although I think it's interesting when you go to the coffee shop and they're blaring the music in there and it's classic rock that was produced well before the person was even born. And they're digging it. I think it's great. Yeah. So what's old is new again type of thing. But what's different about this toy fad versus Pogs or the hula hoop is the fact that social media, YouTube, and all of these things
spread it
around very, very, very quickly.
So what took Pogs months to distribute around the U.S. and whatnot, it took this fidget spinner weeks. Days or weeks to get as much traction as the other ones did.
Look how fast Pokemon Go went from
There's another good example.
Launch to phenomenon to fall.
It's actually still doing pretty decent these days. I mean, I'm not covered in the news.
It's leveled up. Peak.
Yeah.
Right, it's definitely off its peak, but there's still plenty of people playing it. I was surprised when I looked it up.
There's still people walking into lampposts?
I'm sure there are.
Well, as that becomes kind of a common thing, then you don't really pay too much attention to it when it happens. Right?
You just start getting calluses in your forehead.
So, Alan, you had one more you wanted to throw out?
Well, speaking of Nintendo, I think I brought up the new Nintendo console that came out recently, the Nintendo Switch.
Yeah.
So its gimmick for it is that it's got a little docking station that you just set the console in and you can play on your TV, and then you can pick the thing up and it switches immediately over to the screen on the console itself, and you play on that.
Oh,
well,
that's
NVIDIA tried this, but they didn't do it very well.
So that means you can pick it up and take it to the bathroom, right?
Yeah, and you sit there playing on your couch, and then you're like, oh, I need to, like, go. And you walk over to it, grab it, pull it out, and then you just continue playing on it.
NVIDIA had a tablet out about a year and a half ago, but it kept overheating.
Right, and it doesn't have the Nintendo name on it.
Right.
Which is a very, very big thing for
some folks, yes.
For some people.
But a lot of the stuff, of course, AMD and NVIDIA power these experiences.
Right, I mean, they all still make a lot of the components of them, but it doesn't have the name to sell the system itself. So with this...
this may save Nintendo, though.
Right. It's gotten up to a 7-year high of their share prices because of this console. That has a lot to do with their last console they made, the Wii U, which most people don't even know, haven't even heard of it.
It's different than the Wii.
Right. And heck, I'm into this sort of thing, and I didn't know it was different from the Wii until like less than a month away from it launching.
So why didn't they market it better?
It was terrible.
Maybe they were trying
marketing.
To keep it secret from the competition, and it worked too well.
Well, no, they weren't even really trying to keep it.
They didn't differentiate themselves, or the fact that it was a new product or something like that.
It was a completely new thing, but they called it the Wii U, and they focused so much on the like little tablet that it came with that everyone, and myself included, assumed it was just an add-on to the wildly successful Wii console. And that's what everyone assumed it was until it came out, and everyone's like, oh, it's a whole different machine?
Yeah.
What? So, yeah, that had a lot to do with its failure, I think. It didn't sell so well at all whatsoever. But this new system that they've made up, the Switch, is starting to get more and more backing. It's still pretty hard to find one in stores. And
as soon as they open the box.
And more companies are starting to get behind it to actually make games for the thing, which is a very important thing.
That's the thing. You got to have an ecosystem.
Yeah, absolutely.
To make the thing worthwhile. And a lot of platforms have gone because they haven't had an ecosystem.
Right. And while
is that a technical term?
Yes, that's how you call it. But while the amount of games you'd find on a shelf are pretty low, like maybe a dozen, maybe a dozen and a half or so, it's starting to get more and more backing from people and companies wanting to make games for the thing because of how well it looks like it's starting to be doing, especially in Japan, where its portability is a big selling point.
Yeah.
Because it's got pretty good graphical capabilities. It's nowhere near to the level of like its competitors, the PlayStation 4 or the Xbox One, but it does pretty darn good for what's a handheld system.
Now, if we ever get good cheap bandwidth out there wirelessly, you can imagine legions of people twitching these things,
right? Streaming from the devices. Yeah, it's a ways away from that.
So. Speaking of things in the future, National Geographic has a documentary out called Year Million that one of the very first things that they talk about in this glimpse into the future of our species is first episode focused on a family as they dealt with the death of their daughter and her subsequent resurrection into a cyborg clone. The end result is very rather like the Twilight Zone, you know, really in a modern rendition, or the show Black Mirror, which is kind of a terrifying glimpse of how many ways tech can possibly turn on us. But towards the end of the first episode, the United Nations declares artificial intelligence to have the same rights as human. It sounds bizarre. I'm sorry. That's the plot to Millennium Man.
Yeah.
That
great Robin Williams.
Yeah, that
movie was
an awesome movie.
I got to tell you, if you thought the movie was too silly, because it starts out, you know, kind of silly, but if you sit through that whole movie, you won't have a dry eye.
No.
When the credits roll.
It's an amazing film. It's one of my favorites.
It has an emotional impact. It succeeds where Steven Spielberg's movie AI flat fell on its face, because you actually feel empathy for this character, whereas the character in AI just had you sitting there scratching your head going, what? Yeah, what happened?
It's like that Short Circuit movie. You started to feel for the robot. Back
exactly. Yeah, Johnny Five.
Input.
I understand there was supposed to be a remake of Short Circuit, which I hope they don't, because it doesn't need one.
You're right. It doesn't need it. You're absolutely right.
It's perfectly watchable as it is. It holds up,
even though a lot of the stuff is
the 80s dated. Hairdo doesn't really work.
Yeah, the hairdos and the music and all that. Are kind of laugh out loud funny, but the basic premise of the film, I think, holds up very, very well.
Yeah, it's about, you know, a robot becoming
self-aware
and developing its own personality and then getting society to accept it. It's been done a number of times. This one was kind of funny the way it did it, but yeah.
Very cute, yes. Yeah.
Now, it's been proposed to put a tax on robots that displace workers, and even Bill Gates has said that if a company replaces workers with a robotic system, then the company should pay taxes equivalent to what the workers would have paid in order to create a fund from which the displaced workers could be compensated.
Yeah, except 90% of it's going to be wasted. But anyway.
Boy, we could get into what California is up to, but this isn't that show.
No,
we don't want to go there. But even beyond finances, researchers, and this has been an ongoing thing in every science fiction movie about artificial intelligence, putting the kill switch in to stop the machine from acting in a way we don't want it to. Anybody remember Terminator? You know?
Yeah, kill switch would have been nice in that movie. Stop it right in the beginning.
But they tried to shut it down, and that's when he launched the nukes. Long before that, there was a film called Colossus, The Forbin Project. That dates all the way back to the 1970s. Same thing. Somebody thinks it's a great idea to give an emotionless computer that's very, very sophisticated the keys to the nuclear missiles, because that way there can't be an accidental launch or anything. And they did the same thing with War Games.
Yeah, War Games.
War Games. And, of course, it all goes horribly wrong.
Of course.
And trying to hit the kill switch is when the thing decides to defend itself and wipe out humanity, et cetera. So that one's been kind of beat to death.
Besides, these things are essentially machines. They have a program, and programs can be hacked.
Yes. Lawnmower Man was another artificial human becoming artificial intelligent combined. Although the graphics in Lawnmower Man will now make you laugh.
Yeah.
Very, very 8-bit stuff. You know. But a good premise. That was based on a Stephen King film.
Mm-hmm.
A Stephen King novel, I should say. By the way, speaking of Stephen King stuff, I'm looking forward to seeing The Dark Tower. That looks like it might be a real interesting movie. I hadn't pictured the character in The Dark Tower being the way he's being portrayed in the, in the trailers. Yeah. If you know anything about the Dark Tower books, there's a central character named Roland. And this guy who's playing him is nothing like what I had envisioned, but it makes sense. So it'll be interesting to see a very complicated storyline. It'll be interesting to see how successful they are. Stephen King movies are either magnificent or awful.
He writes
very complex stories.
Yeah.
Some of them don't boil down to movies all that well.
Yeah, they don't. Although the ABC television has often done some good things with Stephen King's The Shining that was done on ABC was It.
Mm-hmm.
Was very well done. Now there's a new version of It coming out, feature film. They're probably going to screw it up.
Oh, they always do.
Yeah.
One way or another.
You can just about guarantee, because they'll want to do something that is so over the top and has never been seen before, and the audience will go, yeah, next.
Yeah.
And they'll get completely away from the book. So, this series, I'm going to have to see this series Year Million. Who was it I was talking to said that there was some personal problem they were dealing with, and they said, I subscribe to the snowball theory. And, well, what's that? Well, in a couple of million years, Earth will be nothing but a snowball, and nothing we did today will matter one little bit.
Unless we leave, but yeah.
Right. So let's see here. In the time we've got left.
That's pretty good. That's the same thing. You know, 100 years from now doesn't matter.
Yeah. Well,
same idea.
In 100 years, we'll all be gone. Well, maybe that's not so true anymore. The least liked chief executive officer in tech. It is. It's not. Well, Bill Gates is out of it. It's not Bezos. It's not Gates.
Zuckerberg.
It's not Zuckerberg.
It's that Yahoo lady, right?
Marissa Mayer.
Yeah, her.
Is the least likable CEO in tech, according to a survey.
Why?
Let me see. What was the reasons that were given? I'm pulling up the story here. It's on Tech Insider. Top tech CEOs, as a rule, aren't all that well liked. Now, Mayer was once hailed as the savior of Yahoo.
Yeah, I remember that.
In the heyday, it was worth more than $100 billion. They had the big deal with AT&T. They about owned the search engine business. During her tenure, she led the company and was paid, by some estimates, for a four-year gig, $162 million in salary and stock.
I'll take that. I'll do it for half that.
Actually. Yeah, exactly. She began to get a reputation for perfectionist, micromanagement, and alienating. Under her watch, Yahoo had the major security breaches, including a billion user accounts.
Oops.
Yeah. Yahoo ended up being sold to, this is the great irony, Verizon has bought both, of course, Yahoo and AOL at fire sale prices.
Because they bought them for what they're worth.
I was going to say, AOL? Seriously?
Hey, people still use it for
reason. And they have that news, online they have stories, AOL stories, and the pages are hideous.
Yeah.
There's so much ads or whatever on there that they just do not load well.
Also, and this came as no big surprise, did you know, Alan, there is one app that you can, you don't have an iPhone, you have a Samsung, same as I do. There's one app that you can delete off your mobile device that will almost always double your battery life.
Guess which one it is.
Which app do you think that might be?
Facebook.
Yes! Give that man a guitar, a cigar.
Yes. Cupid doll.
And I noticed this myself.
I find deleting Facebook makes things in general better.
But. Yeah, the phone runs faster and your battery life goes up dramatically. When I had Facebook on my phone for the brief time, I was out of juice by 5. My phone would be chirping at me by 5 o'clock, and that would be with a fresh charge in the morning, and just the constant updates and things like that. Now I have Facebook for some reason on the tablet; it doesn't seem to have the same problem.
Well, the tablet has more juice.
Well, the tablet has more juice, but Facebook doesn't seem to chew through it as fast. But there are things you can do. But yeah, Facebook was in the background activity was using 47% of the author's phone battery.
That's dreadful.
It is.
That's shameful.
Snapchat using about 5%. Mail on push was using about 5%. Instagram around 4%. But yeah, Facebook is a juggernaut of features, according to one tech consumer. Juggernaut is hardly the word I would use.
Not complimentary.
Bloated amount of features, maybe.
Yeah.
Excessive. Too many.
They should have a Facebook Lite.
Yeah. And this author had his settings to background app refresh, so it wasn't, actually doing anything, but for whatever reason, it was just hogging up the resources. So you got to wonder, what did the coders do that?
So I said they needed Facebook Lite.
They had a deadline. They had to get the thing out by, and so they did whatever they could to get it out by X date. And efficiency be damned.
Exactly. That's well.
That's probably true.
Speaking of on time, it is time to end this episode of Boomer Tech Radio. Hey, subscribe to the podcast. Check out the website, boomertechradio.com. Drop us a line at boomertechradio@gmail.com. It's Bob and Brenda and Alan saying, wherever you go, whatever you do, be safe, be good to each other.